Professor Jocelyn Cesari of the Harvard University Divinity School has written extensively about Islam and the West after 9/11.
The perpetrators of the 9/11 attacks were ideologues, even if they present themselves as pious, and they were pious. And even if they say that they represent the true Islam, we know that they were following, and some of them are still following, very politicized version of Islam. So when 9/11 happened, of course, it's in the shock and the emotion. It's very difficult for people to make the difference. So when people say that they attack the U.S. because of Islam and to make retaliation against infidel Americans, they say this is Islam. So I remember that one of the first positions of President Bush at the time was indeed to use also on his side a very religious language. He talked about crusades. So right there, you had a sort of religious war going on, and it was the worst you could do. I have to say, on the credit of his administration, that he pedaled back and he didn't pursue this line, but there were clearly a feeling or perception that we were entering some kind of new holy war.
I wonder, was it a new holy war, or was it 12 years after the fall of the Berlin Wall, a new kind of Cold War? Did you sense, as a scholar, this was a new division in the world?
After the collapse of the Soviet Union, the end of the Cold War, there was a very strong, elated, enthusiastic feeling in the U.S. that there was no more enemy. You know, the whole American history was shaped since World War II on defeating the communist enemy, to the point that even internal disagreements were dismissed or downplayed. So once the communists has disappeared, the question became, there is no more history. You may recall that Fukuyama wrote a book on that. This is the end of history. We don't have to fight anymore. And there was this very special period where Americans, so this was it. We don't have any more enemy. We are the global superpower and nobody can defeat us. And then 9/11 happened. And I think that, if I may say so, a slap in the face of this very strong conviction that there were no more problems for American values, American political project out there. Yeah. And I think Americans have not recovered from that. All their action is a politically driven outside or inside. You can read them as an attempt to overcome this feeling that we may not be well received as we thought we were. You know, Americans are still very convinced that their values are good for everybody. And even now, we are witnessing the Taliban getting back to Afghanistan like the 20 years didn't even happen. So that's very traumatic, I think, for Americans. And you can read their politics through this lens.
It's worth pointing out that the vast majority of Muslim leaders, the heads of state, condemned the attack. I mean, I think even President Khatami of Iran, Megawati Sukarnoputri in Indonesia, Hosni Mubarak in Egypt. But were there parts of the Islamic world that somehow felt empowered by 9/11?
Oh, I would say with no doubt the street felt empowered by 9/11. That was the first time that a Muslim group could defeat the West, you know, or at least weaken it. There was this kind of shock and awe, but I would say that, again, the political groups based on Islam felt that this was a turning point. What they find out very quickly in the months following 9/11 and later on is that this global form of jihad is not what they are willing to do. I mean, if we think of it, until now, most of the jihad are not global. Al-Qaeda and later on ISIS are actually atypical. Most of the jihad has been national. Think of Hamas, think of Hezbollah. So very soon it was clear that these movements from Palestine to Lebanon to other parts of the Middle East didn't agree with the global jihad. But nobody made this difference in the media or even in the political circles. And the disagreement has grown even further or has intensified in the last 20 years. And we have witnessed the Palestinians rejecting the attempts of global jihadi groups, trying to hijack, so to speak, their fight, their national fight. And that's true also in Lebanon. That's why Iran condemned. Iran has been very adamant that this is not the right way to fight. And Hezbollah is condemned also.
In 2004, now that was after the US and its allies, including Australia, invaded Iraq without a UN mandate, there was a very detailed poll by Pew Research in several Muslim countries, and it did show this extraordinarily high level of sympathy for Osama bin Laden. I think 65% in Pakistan, 55% in Jordan. Did that suggest to you, Jocelyn, that there had been a simmering resentment of the West, especially the United States?
I would say not the United States only. The Westerners have a very essentialized and simplistic vision of Islam. The Muslims have the same with the West. For the Muslims everywhere, from Turkey to Tunisia to Lebanon to Jordan, the West is the oppressor. Period. And I mean, now they can even go back to the Crusades, which is ironical in some way because previously there was no real recollection of the Crusades as an important event in the Muslim Empire. This was not something important while it was for the West. Important, but because of colonization, post-colonization, because of multiple aggression of the West on Muslim lands, the West is America now, but it was Europe before. And now I would even say for Muslims, the West is also embodied in some of their rulers. Bashar al-Assad is the West. It's not even geographical or even limited to culturally and historically what we call the West. What has happened in the last 20 years is any kind of regime that uses Western values, Western tools, or is funded by Western powers is the West. And that's very worrying in this sense, because the dissent is not only between Islam and the West, it's also within Muslim lands about what kind of allegiances, loyalties people are having.
That is fascinating, Jocelyn, because if 9/11 made Western countries and Western populations feel vulnerable, what effect did 9/11 have on leaders and elites in the Muslim world?
Oh, that's a very good question. Actually, what happened is that most of the Muslim leaders, heads of states, took advantage of 9/11 because what they did is to present themselves as defenders and guarantees against, you know, the threat of global jihad. And they succeeded in a lot of ways to do so. You can see the return of some countries. I'm thinking of Morocco, for example, that gained a new status in the eyes of Americans because it can be seen as a friendly state, a Muslim-friendly state. Turkey for a while had this position until the war in Syria, actually. But Turkey was seen for a while by the West, I'm thinking not only American, but also European, as a friendly state. And Turkey was presenting itself as a fence against global Islamic threats. And today, if you look at the regime of Egypt, of Sisi with the military, he has presented his position, which is to actually crush any kind of political opposition and justifying it as a fight against terrorism. And this has been very well received in the eye of Western powers, including, I mean, not only America, but also Europeans. So I would say that the Muslim states, most of them, have benefited from the war on terror. The big victims, again, are parts of the population and also the political opposition movements. That all these states, we have to keep this in mind. We are not talking about democratic states here. All of them are authoritarian. So any kind of resource they can use to oppress the people, they will use. And the war on terror has been one of those.
This is the Religion and Ethics Report. Andrew West with you. This week we are discussing the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. Our guest, one of the world's most preeminent scholars in this area, Professor Jocelyn Cesari of Harvard University. Her new book is called We God's People, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism in the World of Nations. She's also written The Islamic Awakening and Why the West Fears Islam. Jocelyn, we had seen so-called political Islam before 9/11, most obviously in Iran after 1979. But did 9/11 actually entrench or turbocharge this idea of political Islam, an Islam that was a way of governance as opposed to a personal observance?
Yes, absolutely. What 9/11 did is actually to create an atypical form of political Islam. As you said, we were used not only of political Islam in the Islamic Republic of Iran, all forms of political opposition to states in Muslim countries were in some way or another based on Islam. There was a very short moment where the authoritarian states were challenged by communists, but the state, the leaders crushed that. And interestingly, they thought that Islam would be just indeed, as you said, private. So they didn't really pay attention. And in some ways, they also supported movements based on Islam. But what happened is that these movements turned against the states. And so everywhere from the 60s until now, political opposition in Muslim world, in the Muslim world, has been based on Islam. What Al-Qaeda does is to create something that is completely new, which is a political fight that is not geared toward the unjust ruler or the leader of the Muslim state, but it's a global jihad, which means that in order to defeat the leader in Egypt or Syria or Tunisia, you have to attack its best support, which is the West, and the West has become global. So Al-Qaeda is the outcome of this conjunction between the necessity to fight politically against the unjust ruler, which is now the whole West. And it is also a combination of this fight with a very intolerant interpretation of Islam, which is the Salafi Wahhabi Islam. And the two together created what I would call this monster, which is Al-Qaeda.
Let's talk, Jocelyn, about how 9/11 affected the Western world in particular. How did it change the rules, or at least the tone of Western politics?
For the US, it has made security the major element or trigger of foreign policy. While the US for a while were trying to be multilateral and to be involved in a sort of global dialogue, after 9/11 until now, the only concern is the security of the US, which will mean more unilateral decisions, and we are seeing it right now in Afghanistan. The second is, even in Europe, securitization is the key word. It has led to greater control of Islamic activities. Even if you pray now in Europe, you may be suspected as a terrorist, meaning there is less and less difference made between religious practice and ideology and terrorism.
But you'll recall, Jocelyn, there had been a lot of discussion in the 1990s about that famous thesis of Samuel Huntington, the clash of civilizations. We should point out that the Huntington thesis actually referred to the Islamic world as only one of seven potential clashes.
Yes.
But nonetheless, how much did that idea about the clash of civilizations take hold after 9/11?
His book was intended to explain the post-Cold War situation. He was trying to oppose the Fukuyama approach of the end of his story by saying, you know, there may not be a communist enemy anymore, but we are still vulnerable to new kinds of conflicts based on values, culture. And indeed, in the book, Islam is one of the enemies, but he does devote a lot of time to the fact that Islam is more violent, which again, part of this stereotype. He has this chapter called The Bloody Borders of Islam, and that's part of the fact that it became so central. So 9/11, in some ways, confirms this approach. And it's interesting because in the academic world, the thesis, the clash of civilization thesis, has been invalidated. We have all the data that show that the conflicts are higher within civilization than across civilization. But the fact that if you look at statistics today, Muslim majority countries are the most countries involved in political violence. You have the rise of the global jihad. So politically, it has become more and more influential. I remember that after 9/11, all over Europe, there was this idea that indeed we were facing a clash of civilization between Islam and the West. And again, if you look at today, the rhetoric of extreme right movement in Europe, they use a civilizational approach. They say, we want to defend the Christian civilization against Islam.
Jocelyn, there was another famous hypothesis that also took hold, and that was the idea popularized by Chalmers Johnson, and it was blowback, 9/11 being the result of US hubris and interference. Did the US reflect on its possible own role in the making of 9/11?
Certainly not in the political circles. Again, since 9/11, the goal is to maintain the security of the US internationally and also to justify any kind of aggression or aggressive posture internationally, also as a way to promote the values of American politics and political system. So they have not done this kind of introspection or internal reassessment, not at all at the political level. The Americans have done it. And that's, I think, also part of the trauma. They are not confident as they used to be in the institutions and values that the US leaders are claiming outside. All the data shows that the trust in American institutions is the lowest in history. And it feeds all the sides. It feeds the people who will vote for Trump, but it also feeds the feeling of uneasiness of the young people, the same who will be part of the Black Lives Movement, you see? And that's what we are not understanding here. And that's what I call the trauma of 9/11. The new generations, even if they were born after 9/11, have been socialized in domestically in this uncertainty of these values that the US leaders are still exporting and claiming as being the only one on the international scene.
Was religion weaponized after 9/11? We obviously had that with Al-Qaeda, but I also remember, as you said, George W. Bush spoke about a crusade. I think there was a US general, William Boynton, who said about Muslims, well, my God is bigger than your God. To what extent did it weaponize religion?
It happened in the US. Right after 9/11, as you may recall, there were attacks against Muslims or people who look Muslims, even if they were not, like the Sikhs, for example, because they wear turbans and beards. And what is interesting is a year after 9/11, the attacks against Muslims receded, it declined. And then it came back again, but not against Muslims only, but again, the signs of the Islamic presence in the US, mosques most of the time, Islamic centers. And the rejection was, we cannot accept the presence of Islam on our soil because it is not a religion, it's an ideology of terror. And that's exactly the weaponization you are talking about, or what I call securitization. And this has not gone away, and Trump is not the cause of it, he's a symptom of it. I mean, this fear has been growing among Americans in the last decade or even before.
Professor Jocelyn Cesari of the Harvard University Divinity School. And you're with Andrew West.